Farm View with Kieran O'Connor on WLR.
Brought to you by TierlawnFarmLife.com.
Hello and welcome to Farm View. Well, as usual, it's Kieran O'Connor here with your weekly farming programme. Once again, a busy show for you this week. On this week's show, I talked to Marco Special Phelan O'Neill of the Farmer's Journal on Don Meats acquiring shares in New Zealand-based Alliance Group and how British consumers are buying less beef. I'll have an update and potential of the role of robots for Irish dairy farmers. I'll preview next week's Bailey's Champion Cow, Ireland's richest dairy competition, and we'll have the results of our Tramore Races Tix competition for passes to this week's Tramore Racing Festival. And plus, as always, we'll have our farming calendar.
Farm View with Kieran O'Connor on WLR.
Brought to you by TierlawnFarmLife.com.
Well, a heading last week on the Journal that British consumers buying less beef as prices rise. And the man who broke that story, indeed getting more into detail on this story, is Phelan O'Neill, the market specialist from the Irish Farmers Journal. Phelan, welcome back to our programme.
Hi, Kieran.
In your statement, you say it's a catch-22 situation. Farmers need higher beef prices, but consumers are resisting the need to pay more. And that really sums it all up, Phelan.
That's it in one sentence, really, Kieran. The bottom line is no farmer, and we've had a decent run of beef prices this summer, this spring and summer. But there's no farmer will say, look, that this is a get-rich-quick scheme. In fact, it's for the first time, you might say, in several years, beef production on farm, whether at suckler level or finishing level, you could say has left a bit of a positive margin. Certainly every other year when you look at the Chagas figures, it's been the common agriculture policy payments that have actually been carrying the industry and carrying farmers' income. And there were many cases they were actually using it to subsidise the income. So, the reality is the price rises are needed. But the consequence of that then, as we said in the piece, the consequence of that is then that there's consumer resistance now beginning to kick into that. And there are other cheaper proteins available in the market, such as pork and poultry. Never mind the whole place for imported beef coming into the UK supermarkets for the first time.
And really on that one, on the Mercosur, and we spoke last couple of weeks and I spoke to Paul Noel at dawn on this, the fact that these outside agencies are coming in and different countries like Brazilian beef has been well flagged in that. Has that really unstabilised the market in the UK, and not alone in Ireland, but in the UK in particular?
It hasn't had any dramatic effects so far, Kieran, but the reason for that is production is very much down in the UK as well as Ireland. Like, we're all aware that factories have been running almost just over half what they would expect for their normal throughput this time of year. And Bord B are forecasting it will handle 87,000 less cattle in total in 2025. It's a similar picture in Britain. There, the HDB, who are the levy board over there, their figures were at the start of the year were suggesting that they'd be down 150,000 head. So when you look at that, that does leave a bit of a gap on the supply side. So any imported product that has come in so far hasn't really had a disrupting effect on the market. Now, of course, it's all about volume and it's all about numbers. If a few more cattle becomes available here, as we would expect in the coming weeks, and similarly in England, the thing that it's always the
supply and
the
demand
rice that tips the scale, that tips the scale, if you like, and then a bit of a surplus in the marketplace could have potentially a devastating effect.
Because I know locally the Dungarvan Mart on Monday last, there were literally almost record prices there last Monday, so definitely the demand is there, and as you say, unfortunately the supply, but as you say, over the next couple of weeks as farmers start selling and taking cows off the grass to sell, that could tip the scales in the other direction.
Yeah, it's one of the great ironies of this spring and summer. Another new record is hardly news anymore. It's a kind of nearly expected week on week at this stage.
Correct.
And it is, come back to the core point, there's still going to be no farmers excessively rich as a result of this. Finishers are paying more for the store cattle. And then you go back and take it right back to the start of the chain. I've never yet heard anyone say that suckler farmers are getting paid too much for weanlings. The reality is they put in their really hard yards at the start of the animal's life and create the opportunity for everybody else along the way to have their go at the business.
So obviously farmers are putting huge work into sustainability as regards quality, traceable, and indeed the standard we have in Ireland is second to none, the grass-based system. What do we need here to balance the scales? Because obviously there's a food security one on one hand, the supply demand on the other, and the bottom line is farmers need to make a few bob in the middle of it all. As you say, this is the first time in years that farmers are making it from the beef itself as against from the Common Agricultural Policy payments.
Yeah, and look, that is a catch-22 situation. Again, I was at Tullamore Show on Sunday, and I observed there, and I indeed participated in the sustainability tent that was at the show, which was an absolutely fabulous demonstration of best practice in terms of sustainable farming and sustainable agriculture. And Ireland is truly, a global leader in this space. And that's not an exaggeration, because if you look at the emissions per kilo of beef or litre of milk from livestock in this island, it's amongst the absolute best in class of anywhere in the world. You know, perhaps the only ones that will come close or maybe even surpass in the case is when you have the hormone-fed product and the very intensive production systems that are in place in the United States. Mm-hmm. But in terms of a grass-based system, there's basically nothing that touches ours. And even the South American production, which is a fabulous product in most cases, the reality is they don't have the same frequency of calving intervals. They're keeping cows for longer and cattle are slower to finish and all that. So therefore, inevitably, it has a higher emissions per kilo of product. But getting a value into that, consumers, right. It's a wonderful line. Consumers, they want it all, but they are very reluctant sometimes to pay the money for it. And I think our challenge is that we have to keep telling the good story that we are doing and try and dig in on price as best we can, because this all comes at a cost. We can't do it for nothing.
And finally, on this one, of course, the British market, obviously, albeit with the whole Brexit scenario and all the hoops and loops to go through to export, is the British market still one of our largest markets still, or are we going elsewhere to really get the good price and indeed get the good volume?
And putting it very briefly, for beef, absolutely, almost half of our exports go there every year, and it hasn't changed one iota since
Brexit
was voted for or since it came into effect. So the reality is it's very much part.
A lot of people don't realise that, what you've just said about Britain.
No, and most of the rest of it goes to mainland Europe. Like, we have made very slow progress in terms of developing markets internationally. And look, part of the reason for that is that you're going head-to-head with Brazilian, with Australian, with North American exports, and those are coming in many cases, not in the US at the moment, but certainly in many cases Australia and South America, for much lower price cattle.
But you're not comparing like for like, and that's the bottom line.
No,
as you say, we have to sell that message.
Yeah. The best market you can have, Kieran, is the one that's on your doorstep. That's one of the highest beef value markets in the world, and we're lucky has the geographical proximity to that our supply chains are very much interlinked, and that has been our business really since time began, and that will continue to be the centre point of our beef business. Lamb's diversified well into France. Pork and dairy, of course, are diversified globally, but in terms of beef, our best market is the one next door.
And of course, we have great breaking news this week with Dawn Meat selected as a preferred long-term strategic partner of New Zealand-based Alliance Group. Huge news for Dawn Meat.
It certainly is. It's one that's been in gestation there for a few weeks now. And I suppose we always thought in Ireland, we looked around and wondered when the day would come that one of the big North American or indeed Brazilian global companies come in and sort of picked up one of our meat processing groups here as a gateway to the British and European markets. Well, this is something of a reverse of that. In fact, Dawn now has moved into New Zealand by putting and buying a 65% shareholding in that business. Ultimately, they will have the final say on it. And that will be a gateway, very much given the management expertise and the marketing expertise that Dawn will bring to that business. It very much will give New Zealand beef and lamb a great boost coming into both the EU and the UK markets, where, of course, New Zealand in the last couple of years has secured trade deals, and that gives them a very, very preferential trading base as well.
And because they're selected as preferred long-term strategic partner for this Alliance Group from New Zealand, it's a huge boost for Dawn Meats and all involved in it.
I believe that's a very good business move from a Dawn perspective. They're buying into, a country that would have a very similar agriculture, would have a very similar place in New Zealand to what it has in Ireland. So culturally, you would imagine they would be well aligned. We're both major exporters into global markets. And of course, Dawn will get a benefit as well. New Zealand will get a benefit from point of view of access to the UK and Europe. But of course, this will will give Dawn an entry into North American markets and Asian markets, where we haven't made as much of an impact perhaps as we have closer to home. So this will give, through Alliance, this will give Dawn an insight to those markets. So it feels like a very good fit all round.
Phelan O'Neill, market specialist of the Irish Farmers Journal. As always, thanks for taking our call.
Thanks, Kieran.
Farmview with Kieran O'Connor on WLR.
Brought to you by TierlawnFarmLife.com.
And welcome back to part two of Farmview. Now let's have a look at some items from our farming calendar. Turning to our livestock marts, as always, on Saturday morning, general cattle sale at Waterford Ross Mart from 9, calf sales from 10, sheep sales, of course, every Monday from 10 at also at Waterford Ross Mart. While the first weaning sale is on this Monday, the 18th of August at 5:30 p.m. with a strong demand for all types. Dungarvan Mart general cattle sale on Monday from 11. Calf sales now also, of course, taking place on Monday from 10:45. And also, Anne was on to remind us that on Monday week, the 25th, Dungarvan Mart, as part of IFA's nationwide campaign on farmers' heart health, You Are the Heart of Your Farm, are hosting free heart health checks, and we'll have more details on next week's program. While the first weaning sale at Dungarvan Mart will take place on Thursday, the 11th of September. Turning to our farmer markets and country markets, and as always, what a huge array of top-class farm fresh artisan food we have available every week across the city and county. Saturday mornings, we've Tramore Farmers Market, Priest Road, Tramore. Strably Farmers Market every Saturday from 9 till 1, while also on Saturday mornings, Waterford Farmers Market in John Roberts Square. Sunday, there's Moore Farmers Market, Castle Avenue runs from 9 till 4, while also on Sunday morning, we've the Ardmore Farmers Market just off the beach car park from 11 to 3. Thursday, Dungarvan Farmers Market, Grattan Square runs from 9 till 2, while on Friday mornings, you've Waterford Country Markets in St. Olaf's Hall from 9 till 2. Also on Friday morning, Dungarvan Country Markets at the Causeway Tennis Club in Happyside, again running from 9 until 2. Busy time ahead on the show front this Saturday. We have the Cappermore Agricultural Show in Limerick, while also on Sunday we have the Bantry Agricultural Show in Cork and the Tullow Agricultural Show in Carlow. On Wednesday next we have the Bantry Show in Tipperary, as well as the Bailey's Cow, the Virginia Show in County Cavan. That's always a huge show, we'll preview later in our programme. While the date for your diary, Saturday the 23rd of August, is the Iverk Show in Piltown. And now to our Tramore Races Takes competition. Fantastic response. Two lucky winners of passes to Tramore's Racing Festival this weekend, and the two lucky winners are John Troy Medeligo Kappa and TJ Van de Velk Ballyduff Kilmeaden. Once again, our thanks to Owen Byrne, the racecourse manager, and let's hope we'll have a great 4 days racing this weekend at Tramore.
Farmview with Kieran O'Connor on WLR.
Brought to you by TierlawnFarmLife.com.
Well, a few years ago on our programme, we did a feature about the robot dairy farmers group down in the Clannagh Rathgormack area. For an update on the situation on robots, indeed the up-to-date situation as regards robots on farms across the county, earlier in the week I got a chance to talk to Pat Fitzgerald from Adelio. Pat, first of all, robots, when did you get involved and why did you get involved with robots?
Hi Kieran, thanks for having me. I started robot milking in November of 2017. Look, at that point, you know, it was a post-quota era, dairy farming had changed a lot, and I had an old 12-unit milking parlour. You know, it was taking me 2 hours morning, 2 hours evening milking cows. And I was going to extend to an 18-unit parlour. And I must have been looking on YouTube one day and I saw robotic milking and I said, I should just give these a look. So when I looked at them and went meeting farmers, I said, look, I felt this is a game changer here. Even at that point, labour was becoming a big issue on farms. So I investigated further and I saw that they worked particularly on a grazing system, which at that point, maybe there were question marks because robots had initially probably been created for indoor milking.
Great contact. Yeah. Very like once a day milking, people question once a day milking as they did robots. And I remember meeting the guys down with Seamus Carney, the child health advisor who had coordinated the Clannagh Rathgormack. I think guys were surprised how well the cows adapted, number one, and indeed the results of having the robot as regards their work-life balance, and also didn't affect the quality and the milk solids and indeed the yields.
Well, I suppose it. Look, there's no any farmers, including myself, is going to be suspicious of something that is so new and so different. Look, I started in November of 18. The initial changeover for man and beast. Is, you know, it takes a bit of work, but the cows adapted really, really quickly. Like, and at this stage, or even look 6 or 12 months into it, it became apparent that cows love robotic milking. It takes all of the stress out of their life. they're working on their terms. I would openly admit it took me longer to adapt,
okay,
because you become so institutionalized into 6 o'clock in the morning, 4 o'clock in the evening, that you know you have to operate on a different clock.
And there's a lot of people fear that you weren't seeing the cows once a day, twice a day, and spotting in advance some health problems, some medical problem, or indeed from a heat point of view. But really, the technology is there now to support you.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, the truth of it is, I'm not just, you see your cows twice a day in a conventional parlour. Robotic milking, they're monitoring your cows 24/7.
Yeah.
I have found over the years that any problems with mastitis, they are flagged 2 days before mastitis becomes...
Really, the technology, and it even has advanced over the last 10 years. In fairness to the companies involved with the robots, I can remember the very first year, Lely, at the ploughing, people were looking at it all and they were saying, this will never work on farm.
Yeah, I upgraded my robots last November. I changed from the Delaval Classic to the VMS, Delaval VMS 300. And the speed that technology is improving, and even the engineering, I would say, look, I mean, this is the same across all the companies. They are doing everything to make robotic milking more efficient.
And regards the lifestyle for you, how it has changed. You're a young family man, you have two young kids. The work-life balance is really fantastic. And also all that information on your phone and backup from your own sitting room and indeed from your bedroom.
Yeah, well, look, I suppose there are a couple of key points that I'd like to make on that. Look, I suppose when you make the choice to become a dairy farmer, this is not 9 to 5, but... robotic milking makes it as close to that as is possibly possible in the industry. My experience of robotic milking is when I try to distill it down to, where is the big advantage?
Yeah.
My sense of it is that I save one milking per day per year. That's 365 milkings. That's 730 hours back to me that I can spend with my family. I can spend it doing something else on the farm if I want to. Now, the robot companies, they say that it's 7 hours per cow per year. That would mean on my farm with 140 cows, that's closer to 900. But that gives a huge amount of time back to the farmer do as they will. But family time is important. I have a young family. And I mean, while doing this, while giving your time back, I have seen that robotic milking will produce an extra 5% milk. Your production increases 5% because the cows are being milked more regularly when they need to be. And as well as that, because it takes all the stress out of their day-to-day.
And of course, now, as I said, it's about 10 years ago or even more that I did the feature on the group down in the Rathcormac Clonay area. How many farmers now within the county are involved in robotics? And indeed, are you finding that the uptake is getting bigger and bigger?
Within Waterford itself, I think there is somewhere between 20 and 30 farmers. The vast majority of that is in the east of the county, where the uptake has been a lot quicker. Here in West Waterford, there's only two of us milking on robots now. Look, I suppose maybe when dairying expanded in 2015 in West Waterford, robots were still, there was early days. And now, look, I mean, a lot of milking parlours have produced a lot of milk in the last 10 years, and maybe we're coming towards a point where change is coming again. And my sense of it is, I would hope that farmers would consider robotic milking.
Obviously, it's a big cost. And as you said, guys looked at expanding the parlours they had indeed. But as you said, the hours involved, both morning and evening, 7 days a week, the lifestyle that difference has made for Pat Fitzgerald.
Yeah, look, I mean, it's huge, Kieran. There are the 2 hours in the day that you will save, but you have huge flexibility. Look, farmers with young families, I can clock out whenever I need to collect kids or bring them to matches or bring them wherever they need to be, collect them from school or childminders. But look, I mean, that part of it is huge. But it is important to stress that while you are doing this, that your dairy farm is becoming more efficient.
And you feel the quality that you have now, and indeed the the performance from your cows, indeed the quality, is as good, if not even better, than when you were milking twice a day.
There's no doubt on my farm, Kieran, and this don't order robot farmers, that every metric that you produce, that you measure the performance of your dairy farm, is improved on robotic milking. The production is up, milk solids are up, lameness is way down, grass utilisation is better. Okay. I mean, profit, and ultimately the bottom line is like profitability.
I was just going to say, obviously there's a big cost involved setting up, as there is in any large enterprise. What would you say to a young guy who's thinking of expanding, or indeed looking at their future within dairying as regards converting into robots?
Well, look, I mean, the initial start-up costs here, they are more expensive with robotic milking, but not as, you know, if you're comparing two robotic milkers to maybe a 20-unit paradise,
right,
the difference isn't that great. But when you look at the payback in terms of a 5% increase in production and a saving of 700 labour hours, like,
and work,
but, I mean, you pay a man to milk your cows one day, one milking per day.
And of course, as I said, Lely was the first time I saw him at the ploughing. Must be 15 years ago, whatever. The technology that the companies bring, and you're with De La Valle, of course, and you're lucky to have Richie Scanlon and the Scanlon family, Willem, going back over the years. So support is on the ground. So definitely, as regards robots, while you say most of them in the county at the moment are in the east of the county, you think there's huge opportunity for people in the west, or indeed any parts of the county, to look at robots as the option?
I think so, Kieran. I think so. Look, I mean, I'm sure my grandfather or my father, they would have milked cows by hand. And if someone told them that they were going to be milked in a milking parlour, they would have laughed. Yes. Now, to me seems like the next logical step. Maybe I'll be telling my children that there was a time we used to put the cups on manually.
Yeah,
like, you know, everything progresses. Yeah. And I would see this as, look, when I look at the farming press now, an awful lot of the talk is, how do we encourage the next generation to get at dairy farming? And
you feel it's a no-brainer.
I think it's a no-brainer, Kieran, because, look, dairy farming is a lovely way of life, but a lot of farmers would feel, you know, slightly trapped by that twice a day milking.
Okay.
And here is a ready-made solution. And the robot companies have the engineering and the technology is so good.
And just finally, I should have asked you this earlier, how many cows are you milking and how many robots do you need per
cow? Well, I milk 140 cows. It's mine is a split calving system. I have autumn and winter.
Okay.
But that's incidental. Look, generally speaking, the robots will milk 65 to 70 cows per robot.
So you have two robots.
And I have two robots doing that. A point I'd like to make as well on it is that, look, sustainability and derogation is a big thing going forward. But, you know, the fact that I can get more milk out of less cows, that means that my stocking rate can be lower. And that's a very, very relevant point.
Pat Fitzgerald, dairy farmer from Adelie, you've definitely sold it. I'm delighted how enthusiastic you are about it. And as you said, people are worried about next generation get involved in dairying. Robots is definitely an option that guys should look at. Pat Fitzgerald, dairy farmer from Adelie, thanks for talking to me, and thanks for the update on the robots on your farm in Adelie.
Thanks very much, Kieran.
Well, one of the big events on the show front takes place on Wednesday next in Virginia, County Cavan. It's the Bailey's Champion Cow, a €13,000 of a prize fund, the largest fund in Ireland and the UK. And indeed, joining us on the line, a busy man indeed. He's coordinator of the competition from Tyrlawn, and that's Pat Gaynor. Pat, welcome to our programme.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for having me.
Pat, as I said in the intro, the 40th year, the Bailey's Champion Cow, what a prestigious competition and what a great tradition it has built up over the years.
Yeah, look, it's there. It's the longest running partnership with sponsorship in all the shows in the country. I think it's great to see it lasting that long, and everyone very enthusiastic about it from Tyrlawn's point of view and from Diageo Bailey's as well. Look, the show is delighted to have it. It's, as you said, it's one of the biggest shows in the country, really, of its caliber. It's an unusual a class of cows. You know, you have 30 cows there, and you have different sections in the 30 cows, and them all fighting for the one thing, you know. And
And of course, Pat, it's really celebrating the excellence of the Irish Holstein Friesian dairy herds, which is, of course, the base of all the products coming forward. But in particularly, the tie-up with Bailey's, of course, which he manufactured the cream base in Virginia in County Cavan. And to see those 20 cows in the main arena, it's the only show that I know that literally the show stops for the Bailey's champion cow in the main arena.
Oh, yeah. Everything stops for it. And look, you wouldn't get into the ring. There'd be four or five deep around the ring looking at it, you know. And even people that's not involved in dairy and are not involved in cows love to see it, you know, love to see these good cows. And then even the day before, on that morning, they'll be tied in the centre there, a row of 30 cows. And look, it's a sight to see, you know. Right. It's great. And it is bringing to the top the top cows in the country and the Holstein breed, you know. It's really promoting
the cream of the crop, literally.
It's the cream of the crop.
You've entries from the north and the south, so literally an all-Ireland top-class cows competing against each other.
The whole of Ireland, like the highest entries from Northern Ireland is this year. We have 8 cows coming down from Northern Ireland, and they're coming from Derry, all over the north, and then the south, they're going from Kerry, Cork, Wexford.
Munster in the south east, well represented. And of course, the overall champion, the big prize fund, has come down south for a good number of years. I think the last Wofford man to win was John Skeen back in the day. But as regards the prize fund of 13,000, the overall winner will receive 3,000, the runner up will receive 1,500. And as you mentioned, category prize, the best heifer and milk category, also always, and cows in second lactation as well in the junior.
Second lactation as well, yeah. And then we have the highest EBI and the highest Protein Award and the highest Exhibitor Bred Award. Yeah. So,
well, listen, Pat, listen, well done to you and all involved in Tyrlawn and in Bailey's. A fantastic concept 40 years ago, the Bailey's champion cow, the cream of the crop, with a prize fund of €13,000. To you and all involved in Virginia's show on Wednesday night, the best of luck. And let's hope the overall champion will once again come from Munster and the South East. Thanks for taking our call, Pat.
Well, sure, look, thank you very much. And just wanted to take this opportunity of thanking Tyrlawn and Bailey's, Diageo Bailey's, for all the help for the last 40 years.
Thanks,
great.
William,
it's great,
Pat,
to have them on board. Thanks very much, and thank yourself.
And best
thank
of luck you on Wednesday next. Right.
And before I go, what a week we've had for local Waterford connections. Firstly, at the RDS Dublin Horse Show, fantastic win for Emily Kate Robinson with Aplutard, who won the Racehorse to Riding Class. Of course, Aplutard, winner of the Gold Cup in 22, which Rachel Blackmore in the saddle, and of course, trained locally by Henry de Bromhead. We also had wins for Debbie Flavin, Georgina de Bromhead, Jeff Curran, Sam Widger, Paddy O'Donnell, who took a fantastic second in the main arena in the Puissance, with wins all for Millie Toomey and Penny Toomey as well. While in the horses, we had wins for Jack Kent and Michael McGrath, taking the young rider in the Simmons Court, Michael's fourth win in the Simmons Court arena at the RDS. While at the prestigious National Livestock Show in Tullamore, fantastic win for Gillian Henbury of Rathcormac, whose ewe lamb won the overall champion, with Jamie White Rosny taking reserve in the overall champion as well at the prestigious Tullamore show. So well done to Gillian and Jamie on their fantastic success at Tullamore. On the racing front, cross channel, we'd wins for Dungarvan jock Trevor Whelan, keeping up his great run. Trevor wins at Newmarket and Leicester, with Kappa jock Tom Queeley back in the winner's enclosure at Lingfield. Back home at Sligo, we'd win for Knocking Butterstone trainer Henry de Bromhead, with young 18-year-old Gabriella Hill, granddaughter of the late Charmaine Hill of Don Run fame, in the saddle. While at Wexford, we'd win for Tallow owner Patrick Gould, trained by his son Arthur Goulding, as well as win for Henry de Bromhead. And also at Wexford, we'd an all Waterford winner in the bumper, with Fraher Field, trained by Dungarvan trainers John and Tommy Kiley, ridden by Ardmore jock John Gleeson, and owned by Dungarvan owners John and Pierce Flynn and Conor Lannan, and bred by Tommy Horgan in Kilmac as well. While once again, a reminder of our text competition, our two lucky winners of passes to this weekend's Tramore races are John Troy Medeligo Kappa and TJ Van der Velk Ballyduff Kilmeaden. So well done to John and TJ. Well, that's my lot for this week's programme. Once again, my thanks to Ollie for all his help in putting this week's programme together. So from myself, Kieran O'Connor, stay safe. Here's looking forward to a great 4 days racing at Tramore, and I'll talk to you same time next week.
Farm View with Kieran O'Connor on WLR.
Brought to you by TierlawnFarmLife.com.